This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Enterprise BizBytes. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm joined in the studio by
Arvind Yuvaraj
and Christine Wong.
Sat in the corner being nice and quiet is Audrey Raj. She's sat here as well, grinning like a loon just there in the corner, right?
Like that cat in Alice in Wonderland.
That's
the Cheshire
one.
Cat, yeah.
The Cheshire
yeah.
Cat indeed. Hello, Audrey. Say hello. Shout out to the... There we go. She's keeping Miss company. We needed a big bright smile in the studio today because Jeff scared the heck out of us yesterday with the stories about the Petya ransomware virus and whatnot. Today, though, it's Fun Friday, so we've got some fun stories lined up for you today. We have stuff about a painless flu jab. We're talking about KFC sandwiches. That's Arvind's story, clearly. Sony music and vinyl, tattoos and Bitcoin. All of those things lined up for you on the show today. Kicking us off, though, is this story about a painless flu jab for people who are scared of injections. I put myself on that list. Christine, please tell me about this.
Right, so I am fully 110% ready for this because I hate injections. I'm sure a lot of everyone listening hates injections as well. And it turns out that there might be a solution to this problem because researchers at Emory University and the Georgia Institute of Technology have developed a stick-on patch that delivers the flu vaccine via microneedles into the uppermost layers of your skin as opposed to flu jabs, which go all the way into the muscle. And I know microneedles sound scary.
Yeah,
but
just a little bit.
But honestly, when I saw the picture, it just looks like a tiny patch of Velcro on a tiny pear-shaped Band-Aid, and it's kind of adorable, actually.
You're using all these words like tiny and adorable. I'm not believing you right now.
To be honest, I think the advantages far outweigh any scary ideas of the word microneedles because... This stick-on patch is supposedly painless with minimal side effects. It's easy for people to use themselves if it gets FDA approved, and it actually doesn't need to be refrigerated. So currently, the flu vaccine needs to be refrigerated, so it's very difficult for pharmacies to stock and to keep the current flu vaccine. But actually, because it's just a stick-on patch, it does not need refrigeration for up to a year. So pharmacies can stock it easily.
So it solves a whole bunch of the problem of transportation and logistics, and it can be sent all over the place.
Yeah, not to mention, you can actually throw it away afterwards as the microneedles dissolve away as well. So it's small, it's portable, it's painless, anyone can use it, it's very intuitive, very convenient. And so the hope is that this might actually encourage more people to get vaccinated as well.
Especially if you get if it's like one of those plasters that you put the cute little cartoony things on. Kids at school will be fine with that.
Oh,
you know,
for sure.
Pop it straight on.
It just looks like a Band-Aid. That's really all it is.
Yeah, I mean, I know people from like way before, like way in school, who wanted to escape the BCG shots.
Right.
So they wouldn't come to school. And then in Form 3, they even stayed back. They didn't get their, I forgot what it's called, the tetanus shots because they were scared of needles. So this could help. These plaster type things, these Band-Aids are not new. They've been using it for lots of other things, like we use like those heat patches. You have like slighter medicines, not really vaccinations, but I think now they're using
nicotine patches for
instance. So it's not a new tech or something that they've just thought up over the weekend or something. But it needs FDA approval. I think because it's a higher dosage and it has to do with vaccinations. So it kind of makes you wonder what they're going to do after this, if this works and if they can administer vaccinations through a patch. What else can they administered through those patches to make it easier for people to access.
This should probably do away with the words microneedle. I don't think that's kind of encouraging anyway.
Maybe, but it does look very, very tiny and adorable. And as someone that hates needles, like really, really hates needles, can't even look at one without feeling a little bit queasy, this sounds perfect and I want in.
Which is interesting because the story that you've got lined up later on is about tattoos.
We'll talk about that later.
All right.
I mean, when you think about this, like especially places where they cannot access proper vaccinations, you cannot transport it because of the heat or the weather or logistics, these will be perfect.
It will. And I'm guessing because, you know, they don't have the problem with the refrigeration or one thing or another, it should bring the cost down, right? Mm-hmm. We'd hope so.
They are hoping to bring the cost down, but, you know, with things like medicines and, with pharmacies and
pharmaceutical companies.
Yeah, I wanted to go there. You don't really know.
Right. Okay. Move on then. We've moved away from plasters and microneedles to something else entirely.
To infinity and beyond.
Infinity and beyond. Come on, Arvind. What is this?
So, you know how we send a lot, lots of things into space. We want to send people into space. We want to send animals into space and cargo into space.
Of course.
We've never sent a sandwich into space.
Perfect.
Yeah.
This is great.
Yeah.
No, so we haven't.
No, we haven't. So I think KFC were thinking, and they're like, we want to send a sandwich into space.
As you do. I mean, as part of their marketing thing. You know.
Yeah. So they put a Zinger into like a small capsule,
right.
And then they launched it. It actually is in space now. So they launched it on Thursday. It's called the Zinger 1. And
the
it
Zinger
was,
1,
it, the
okay.
Zinger 1. It was live broadcast, and it's. I think it's a few thousand
Wait,
feet in the
just
air.
Just hang on a minute. We had a live broadcast of a sandwich launch.
Yeah, right now, you can see fried chicken in space right now.
You can't see it right now because I think the broadcast is off, but it was up to the point where it lifted off.
Amazing.
Yeah. Okay.
So I watched like the highlights. And
you
I saw,
watched it?
I watched it. It was like an hour. I didn't watch the whole hour. I like forwarded to the... I skipped to the part. I keep using the word forward. Skip to the part where it's like at the very end and then it just lifts off and you can see it floating up.
All right. Why are we launching sandwiches into space? What's the idea behind this? Is there a reason? There has to be.
No. One is because KFC is sponsoring this whole thing. That's why it's the Zinger one. They're the ones behind the launch.
Right.
But they're actually working with this company called Worldview Enterprises. These guys make these giant balloons that float into space. And what they want to do is they want to commercialize it. They want to charge people to be able to get into these balloons and float up in space for a few hours. Their goal is to make the balloons go up there and stay up there for maybe a week, maybe a month. They want to let people do it. They also want to let companies hire these balloons or rent these balloons to send things into space for tests. But the balloons can only stay up there for about 6 to 12 hours at most now.
Right.
This burger, the Zinger, is going to stay up there for about 4 days.
Which will be the longest.
Will be the longest for this company. So once it does that, and at the fourth day, I think it's going to take a selfie of itself.
Amazing.
To prove that it was up there. You know, why not? And then it's going to come back down to Earth.
It's so, time. Time for a sandwich space selfie, you
we're
guys.
We're sending a chicken sandwich into space. My question is, you know, we do all the, we've kind of seen these stories about fast food products that have been left out in the open and haven't kind of decomposed at all.
Yeah, we're not saying which companies, though.
But my question is, if something has been, a sandwich has been sent up into space, will there be any kind of decomposition when it comes back down?
No,
because technically it's in a vacuum, right?
It is. But, you know, it's airlocked.
Yeah.
So it's up there. I guess when nothing can go in, so it stays the same. I don't know if anyone's going to eat the sandwich when it gets back down here.
Right. You see, if you were a smart person, you would have sent something to the one of the space stations up there. That would have been a great... Didn't one of the pizza companies do that? They delivered a pizza to
the space station.
I believe they did.
Oh, okay.
Also,
food has been up in
space.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, actual food. I mean, like, you know, like, fast food.
Yes, not the packagey
Not the packagey types, yeah.
All right. Okay, interesting stories to start the Friday off.
It's kind of expensive, though. I mean, they want to charge people about $75,000 just to go up there. Their balloons come with a cabin with large windows, Wi-Fi, a bar, and a bathroom.
Wow. Nice.
And a sandwich.
And now a sandwich.
Brilliant.
If KFC's behind the, you know, the adventures and stuff.
Well, that's an interesting way to kick off the Friday show, I suppose.
It is.
We're going to come back with talking to you about the resurgence of vinyl. Sony Music are now pouring more money back into that again. We have to take a very short break. It is a bit of a heartbreaker with the Walkman. We'll be right back after these messages on Enterprise BizBytes, BFM 89.9, the business station.
Be faithful, men. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise BizBytes with me, Rich Bradbury, and
Arvind Yuvraj
and
Christine Wong.
So here's some here's a little story that I'm quite happy about. Now, if you are of a generation that I belong to, a few of us are a little bit older than others here in the studio, right? Mentioning no names. When I was growing up, we would listen to these little large black discs that we like to call vinyl records, right? And these things kind of started disappearing around about 1989 when they were kind of started to be phased out because, of course, CDs came into play. And then a few years later on, we had digital downloads and MP3s and one thing or another. And part of the death of vinyl was, in fact, due to Sony Records, ironically, deciding to phase it out and work on the development of the CD. Mm. Now, Sony Music have decided that for the first time since 1989, they're going to start repressing vinyl records.
Mm.
So they're going to resume in-house domestic vinyl production at a Japanese factory by March 2018.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know whether you know this, but there's a bit of a demand now for vinyl records. There's a bit of a niche market. People are coming back and starting to buy these records and buy record players, and people, it's the hipsters who are buying it. You know, but it's not. It's people like me as well,
mm-hmm.
because it is considered for many people that the sound of a vinyl record
mm-hmm.
is superior to the digital crispness of the CD or the MP3 player. So it's going to cost them an awful lot of money to do this, and part of the problem is, how music is engineered now is very different to how it had been engineered in the past. Of course, everything is now digital.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Sony are finding it incredibly difficult to find engineers who know how to engineer sound for vinyl records. So that's one of the problems that they're having to work on right now. But as I said, Sony played a major part in killing off vinyl by developing the CDs. And this is a time where, you know, they've got this new studio coming out and they've decided to do this whole thing. If you've heard about it, Record Day, once a year, April,
yeah.
They release a whole bunch of records on that one particular day so everybody can go out and do some crate digging and have a bit of fun buying their own vinyl. I think this is a great idea, though, to get records back out amongst the people, and its global vinyl revenue is expected to hit $1 billion, £770 million this year.
Which is huge.
It's a huge amount of money.
And they say it's even more than people bought stuff on streaming. I mean, stuff on streaming is cheaper when you download digitally, and vinyl is more expensive. But then to actually have $1 billion in sales for records, something that people think is extinct, it's a lot.
The beauty of this is, as well, I mean, if you look at it from a kind of an artist point of view, and we talk about digital downloads, right, and how very little money these people receive from whether it be Spotify or the, you know, kind of streaming services. If you are selling a vinyl record, you have a physical product, and you know exactly how many of these things that you've sold.
Yeah.
So there is that to this.
And you also have, I mean, it's also the aesthetics. You have the album art, and then you hold something in your hand. You
Correct.
Can collect it. It's kind of weird how Sony works, because they killed the vinyl with the CD, and then they also killed the DVD with the Blu-ray.
Right.
And now they're bringing back vinyl into production again. The thing about vinyl sound is that it's lossless.
Yes.
So nothing is lost. Even the flaws are left in the sound.
Which is beautiful.
Which is nice, because that's how the artist wanted to be heard. There's also the thing where vinyl was not a part of this loudness war thing that was going on.
Yeah.
So if you go YouTube songs like vinyl versus CD, you'll see that the ones on CD have been tweaked. Some of the levels are increased. You get the vocals that are louder. It's the same way that TVs in stores always put like the brightest, shiniest pictures on because they want to catch your eye. It's not the best looking picture. CDs do the same thing. So they want the vocals to be up, or they want the guitars to be up. If there's a single on the radio, then they tweak with it on the CD. It's not how the artist wanted you to listen to their songs.
Yeah.
And they also... The other thing at vinyl is you need a good player. So that's another thing that has to happen. People who are interested in getting vinyl have to get a good turntable. New turntables that you buy at places that are like $800 and less are not good turntables.
Right.
They have like a retrofitted kind of a player inside with bad speakers.
Yes.
So it's high maintenance, but it also produces some really good sound.
It does. And I actually, at my house in the UK, I actually have an old vinyl jukebox, which we bought for my my parents' wedding anniversary. And this thing is from about 1972, right?
Nice.
And it looks clearly as though it's literally just stepped out of the 70s. It's brown, and it's orange, and it's yellow, and it's all these horrendously ugly colors. But the sound that comes out of that is incredible. And, you know, it's like you were saying, there's none of this overly compressed sound.
Yeah.
And you have this beautiful warmth to vinyl records.
That's the word, right? Warmth.
Yeah,
that's
you
what
just
they use,
don't get that from digital sound. And now I sound like one of those older generation people.
No, I mean, but...
don't
this, I? This is the thing, though, right? I come from a generation where I didn't grow up with that kind of sound. The sound that I grew up with was the digital compressed sound. I know no other sound. I've never listened to anything on vinyl in my life. But the more you talk about it, the more I want to get into it. Because
exactly.
I think that for an artist as well, to not have that genuine, you know, to not be able to give your listeners the actual product that you want them to hear, I think it's so important for them. Like, I think with the vinyl, you can actually have a more genuine connection to the music and the sound. I don't know. The more you're talking about it, the more I'm kind of into this now.
But the only problem is, Christine, I mean, if you look at the kind of cost factor of owning a digital product, for example, you can go and buy a single on iTunes or wherever for 99 cent or whatever it is. Yet to buy that same song on vinyl, first of all, like Arvin says, you have to invest in a record player,
and
then you have to spend heck knows what, 10 ringgit, 15 ringgit, 20 ringgit even, for just one song. That's the problem, right? It's definitely a niche market right now.
It is. And it's not exactly so affordable for everyone to get.
Yeah.
And even if streaming, you don't even have to pay per song. Like, you subscribe to Spotify, $15 a month, and you get, like, unlimited amount of songs.
Yeah.
And the quality is... If you aren't into the kind of, like, if you aren't listening to the sound, you wouldn't be able to tell the difference unless you're looking out for that kind of depth in the sound quality. I guess it's people who want that organic sound that comes with vinyl. CDs are supposed to be able to have a wider dynamic range. They're supposed to be able to pack more sound into the CD, but they don't make use of it because digital is always compressed.
Yeah.
So when you transfer the sounds from one place to another place, server to server across countries, it gets compressed.
Yeah.
And the CDs you're listening to, that's why they have that sharp sound because they wanted to sound like super up there because they want to catch your ear. So it's a good thing that Sony is doing this because I think a lot of people should get back into vinyl because they have that sound quality that has not been replicated yet.
Absolutely. Okay, we got to take a short break. We've got some music coming up from The Replacements, followed by Bad Finger. And then Christine is going to be coming back and talking to us all about tattoos. Right, Christine?
Yes, I am.
All right, BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Benchmark for managers. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. We're halfway through the show. We've spoken about Sony Records. We've spoken about Chicken in Space and how you may be able to get a flu shot without a jab. Moving on to things that are very jabby. Is that even a word? Have I just invented a word?
You did. I think
I did.
Yep.
Let me know if that is a real word. Get in touch. 018-789-8899. Give me some feedback. Christine.
Yes.
These color-changing tattoos. What's this about?
I am so excited about this. Okay, I know that just a bit, like half an hour-ish ago, I mentioned that I hate needles.
Yes.
But I'm still very excited about this, and this is why. These tattoos change color based on your biology.
Ooh.
Which is... already very cool, but this is the whole story, right? So this project is actually a collaboration between MIT, Harvard Medical School, and a company called Fluid Interfaces. Mm-hmm. And they've developed this color-changing ink tattoo that responds to chemical changes in the body. And the liquid that they would use to tattoo isn't normal ink. It's a liquid with biosensors.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So the project is called Dermal Abyss, which, coolest name ever. And so far, they've come up with three different inks that shift color in response to our interstitial fluid, which is the fluid in spaces between tissue cells.
Okay.
So what it is there are currently three different inks that you could get. Mm-hmm. One ink measures your glucose levels and will shift from blue to brown as blood sugar rises. One ink measures your pH levels, which shifts from purple to pink the more alkaline your body is. And then the last ink measures sodium levels, which when under a UV light goes from completely dark to bright fluorescent green as sodium levels rise. So, I mean, I'm just very excited about this because, first of all, it's color changing, so that automatically makes it the coolest thing ever.
Yeah.
Number two, it's actually like got quite an interesting use because if it does get approved, right, people with diabetes can get the glucose one and then they don't have to do the pinprick test every single time to check their blood sugar.
Yeah.
People with hypertension or hypotension can check their sodium levels with the UV one. I don't know what the pH level one would be technically useful for medically, but it's still cool. And I mean, just in general, like being able to collect your data about your body from a tattoo on your body that changes color is amazing. It's this incredible leap for biotechnology, right?
So hang on. If you've been telling us since the beginning of the show you're scared of needles,
yes,
but yet this could potentially have life-changing effects. You know,
yes.
Is this something you would consider?
I actually would, mainly because, and I'm sorry, Mom and Dad, if you're listening to this and you don't approve of me getting tattoos ever in my life, but...
I think as long as you're not having it on your face, we're okay.
Yeah,
you know?
But I just think it's so fascinating because for me, like, I like junk food, I eat a lot, I enjoy eating and stuff, and I think it would be interesting to be able to monitor my health just automatically without thinking about it, just looking down at my ankle or my wrist or something and being able to see the results and just being like, okay, this is maybe I should chill out for a while on the junk food or something for, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would be so interesting. And also I know people who have diabetes who would be very interested in this product because it just, you don't have to go through all of that hassle, I guess.
I mean, it's an interesting way of looking at things. You know, you could have a tattoo coloured one particular way, and then the whole thing just changes.
Oh yeah.
You know, as your body changes, Arvin.
Yeah, it looks like you know this. I mean, to me, it sounds like I'm painting myself with anxiety. So
every time, such a way of putting things. You know?
No, I mean, you know, every time it goes from black to blue, and then I'm just eating or watching TV or something, and then it goes blue. I'm like, oh God, what's going on now? You know, and then I have to rush off to the clinic. And it doesn't help that, you know, sometimes you're hypochondriac, so you think everything's going wrong, right?
You're Googling, why is my tattoo turning blue?
Yeah, it's like web MD. It's like looking at Google for symptoms on your skin. Yeah. I mean, it is cool. I mean, I can think about the fashion aspect of it. I would love it. So you can choose one color and then it changes to another. Mm-hmm. If you go under the sun and stuff, if your temperature goes up.
Yeah.
But in terms of telling me about my health, yeah, I don't know.
So currently it's proof of concept. It's not actually out yet.
Sadly, they're still undergoing rigorous testing to make sure that there are no side effects like allergic reactions. They're testing the durability of the tattoo. So it's still going through a lot of processes before it ever hits the market. They also have to make sure, because if it is going to serve a medical purpose, they need to make sure that the tattoo indicators are as accurate as possible to the level of accuracy and reliability of a blood test. So they still have a long way to go. There's on the article that's on CBS, there's an incredible video to show you how the tattoo works and how the color change looks and that kind of thing. But I mean, I don't know. Regardless of all of this, I still think that this concept is really great, because I think I'm not as health conscious as I would like to be. And I know that you said that for hypochondriacs or people who, you know, have anxiety about these things, that it might not be helpful. But for me, I would like to have a constant update, because I don't think about it that often. So
I mean, it is an amazing concept what they've done. If they're able to tap into your skin and make it change with your biology, that itself is amazing. I don't know. Personally, I'm just looking at the fashion aspect of it. Not that I'm going to get a tattoo anytime soon, but if I would, I would want to get one that changes color. Because then I don't have to choose. Because I'm also very fickle-minded. So for fickle-minded people who don't want to choose the color of their tattoos, like, do you want, what color fish do you want on your arm? So I could have a blue fish and a gold fish.
You could. And then when you go under UV light, it could totally change again.
Yeah. I'm sure people have taken like 10 years to research this thing, and the only thing that I can think about is a goldfish or a red fish. You know. But that's what it's going to be used for. I mean, that realistically, that's what people are going to use it for the most. But if people can make use of it medically and it can help them, it's amazing either way.
Yeah. Right, we're far away from actually seeing it, but I love the idea of it, and I can't wait to see more about this. Okay, great story. Time for us to take a very short break. Some music coming up from The Killers next, followed by Green Day. When we come back, a little bit about Bitcoin to wrap up the day and to wrap up the week. You are listening to Enterprise Biz Bytes with me, Rich Bradbury, Christian Wong, and Arvin Uberaj. We'll be back in a couple of minutes. BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Because feelings matter. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes on Friday. It's almost time for us to wrap up. We've got plans for the weekend, the two of you? Anything
rest.
Lined up?
Rest. Just rest.
You've not been so good the last few days, right?
I have not been feeling well.
Oh, dear.
I'm getting better, but I think sleep is much needed.
You mean the 4 days off wasn't enough for you?
No.
Oh, dear. There's definitely a problem then. Right. Final story of the day. It's we've been talking about cryptocurrencies regularly for the past 2 weeks. It's made an appearance in almost every day's story.
Oh, yeah.
This one's a bit different, though. It's about a school in New York who have decided that they'll start accepting cryptocurrencies as funds. So you can pay for your child's tuition at this particular school, two of these schools, with cryptocurrencies. It is, in fact, a Montessori school, of course, one of the higher-end type of schools, you know. This fella, his name is Marco Ciocca. He's the co-founder and chairman of the Montessori schools in Flatiron and Soho. He's added the option in June after a lot of the parents started asking him, can we pay in Bitcoin? Which may seem a bit odd to some of us, but as we know, Bitcoin is starting to see a little bit of the mainstream. And some of the offices that are nearby to these schools are both for Google and for Facebook. So it kind of makes a bit of a, you know, it kind of makes a bit of sense.
So it's in that sort of locality.
It's in that locality, yeah. So, but this comes as increasing number of places, including University in London and Greece, they've all started to take a digital currency as payment. So of the 300 students that are at his school, 10 of the parents have already asked if they can pay by Bitcoin, and he expects this number to go up over the next couple of years. As we know, Bitcoin's worth has more than doubled since the start of the year. Right now, it's at around $2,500 per coin.
Hmm.
Oh my word, it's just ridiculous how this thing is flying up.
Yeah, but you know, it's cool that he actually said yes to this.
Right.
Yeah, so he hopped onto that bandwagon. Mm-hmm. He was quick enough to do it. It also shows that the school, like you said, it's a Montessori. So these parents are young parents who have grown up in this sort of age. They are tech savvy and they're very urban people.
Yep.
So they want to pay in Bitcoin because they think, why not? It's the currency of the future. It's going to have a lot of value.
Correct.
And this is a good thing because he's setting an example for other institutions to allow this sort of thing because Bitcoin does have value.
It also has less taxes.
Less taxes.
Just, you know, just saying.
Yeah, so, you know.
Just all those little things.
And it makes it a lot easier for him. So he charges people to give him money in Bitcoin, and he collects Bitcoin. And who knows how much he might have, or this school might have, in the next 10 years when Bitcoin is massive.
Right. I mean, he's charging, the school, they charge $31,000.
Mm.
It's a fair chunk of change, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's a fair amount of Bitcoin to be going at. But like you say, Alvin, you know, it's definitely perhaps one of the currencies of the future. We can definitely see that. I mean, earlier this year, the price of this coin was just up and down and up and down, and it's just all over the place at the moment. But there we go. The future is bright. The future is Bitcoin, so they're saying.
It is Bitcoin.
Right. It's almost time for us to wrap up the show for today. And of course, as per usual, we'll go through the stories that we've covered on today's show. Christine, you started off with?
Yes, I started off with a painless flu jab patch for people who are scared of injections like me.
Yep, and then we also spoke about KFC sending a Zinger to space.
Sandwiches in space.
Yeah, you can see the marketing campaign is out of this world.
Yeah.
He's waited all week for that.
Amazing.
Yeah, I've been gearing
up. Amazing.
Oh dear. Okay, then we talked about how Sony are making a return to vinyl by reintroducing and reopening some of the factories over in Tokyo.
Mm-hmm. And then we talked about how you can soon get a tattoo that changes colors based on your biology.
And then we finished off with Bitcoin is being accepted at a few New York preschools. Mm-hmm. Right. Arvin. Yeah. Podcast recommendations for the week?
Yeah, so on Wednesday, there was this interview with Bert Monroy. But he's a super interesting person because Bert Monroy is the person to show Photoshop what Photoshop could do.
Oh.
Yeah, so back in the late 80s, I think 1989 to 1990, there was a new Macintosh, and the Macintosh could be loaded with the new Photoshop, and Adobe had come out with this new product. Bert Monroy and a few, like less than 10 other people, were the first digital artists to go on Photoshop and show Photoshop the capabilities of the program.
Wow.
Yeah, he was so well versed with it. He is the tutorial before the tutorials became a thing for Photoshop.
Well, he was telling the developers of the software what it could actually do.
So what they did was they called him in. He's a beta tester. Mm-hmm. If they have new functions, they call him in. They ask him to test it. They let him green light it and see if it's okay for, you know, to be put into the next version. So he's seen the versions of Photoshop and he also goes through what digital art is and the state of digital art in the current times when you have like filters and other easy ways to get art out there or pass off as an artist.
Mm. That's fascinating.
It is. Yeah. It was fun talking to him. You know, you can look up for the podcast on the BFM app, which is available on the Apple App Store and Google Play for those of us on Android. And it's also Apple CarPlay enabled.
All right. Christine, what have we got coming up after the 1 o'clock news? Do you have that ready?
No.
Okay. Shall I do that then?
Yes, please.
Okay, coming up after the 1 o'clock news, it's a Breakfast Grill replay, of course. It is Dr. Siu Kawei. He's the chairman of the Tourism Malaysia Chairman, established with the objective of promoting Malaysia domestically and internationally. Tourism Malaysia has since launched numerous campaigns and efforts to establish Malaysia as a tourism hotspot. That's all coming up after the 1 o'clock news. In the meantime, on behalf of myself, Arvin Yuvaraj and Christine Wong, it's time for us to take a short break. We will be back, of course, on Monday at noon. Up next, it's Gold Frap with Sister Magic. You have been listening to BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.